This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at It's Will Time and at BarnettJake. On today's show, the Styles vs. Reigns feud, new talent on the main roster, and replenishing NXT. So Jake, did my ears deceive me, or did I hear a crowd not chanting, "Let's go Roman, Roman sucks," not chanting anything crazy about Roman, but just chanting AJ Styles and Roman Reigns alternatively during a crazy hot segment on Raw?
I heard the same thing. I think it's just time that WWE restrict themselves to running the Midwest, because that's exactly where that happens.
Omaha killed it. Like, it was kind of funny, actually. I'm watching and I'm like, crowds like this, you know, crowds like this don't get that hot. You know, hot crowds are usually in your bigger cities, your more metropolitan areas, at your WrestleMania type shows. This crowd was legitimately split and legitimately really psyched about this AJ Styles and Roman Reigns confrontation. And I would like to say that I echo their passion. I thought what AJ Styles and Roman Reigns did on Raw on Monday night was really, really fun.
I agree. I thought it was a very good segment, and I think they haven't really sold me on the idea of AJ Styles by himself being a true threat to Roman Reigns' championship. But I think throughout the last couple of weeks, they've at least, you know, they've kind of illustrated that even if AJ Styles by himself, you know, likely isn't going to knock off Roman Reigns as champion, at least he's going to be wildly entertaining in the process of trying. And the fact that they, you know, have sort of brought, you know, the Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows in to bolster him, even though they've quickly kind of fallen into regular guy status, I think it's been a very fun group of segments to watch.
Yeah, and one of the things about AJ and Roman that I think makes it more compelling than your average WWE feud, especially more compelling than anything we've seen for a long time, the feud seems to come from who they are as characters. It's not, I'm a terrible bad guy and I do this, and I'm a goody two-shoes good guy and I do this. The feud's really coming from a lot of the intricacies of characters and misunderstandings within them. And AJ and Roman is escalating not by these outright aggressive actions, but by AJ saying, "No, I don't want the chair." But Roman still assaults him because he sees him using the chair on the Usos. The same thing, and that was last week. And of course, this week we see AJ and Roman having this tense confrontation where a weapon can be used, but it's not going to be used, and they keep kicking it back and forth. There's a fun psychological thing there. There's a fun little idea of both men saying, "I'm good enough to not need this," there. I really feel like this is probably the most compelling Roman Reigns has been as a single star, and a really fun and compelling use of Roman Reigns. And one of the benefits of the WWE has is, right now at least, both guys seem likable coming out of this. Both guys seem like decent humans who just want to have the, you know, who want to prove that they're better than the other one in the middle of the ring. They don't seem like bad guys. They don't seem like your stereotypical wrestling villains, and that is a major plus when you have so many people ready to dislike Roman Reigns, but it's almost impossible to with where this feud is.
Well, I think it's, you know, they're two baby faces, really. I mean, yeah. WWE doesn't seem to want to commit to Roman Reigns being anything other than, you
know, the guy.
Just the guy, and that's fine as long as you are able to walk the tightrope of having him have complex moral, you know, interactions with people. And I think AJ Styles has done a great job. I mean, they both have identifiable features that people can talk about. I mean, AJ Styles has his boys, you know, the club, and Roman Reigns has his family, and I think everybody can relate to having both of those groups of people in their lives and how important they are. And they, you know, they both have been given opportunities to have human type reactions to situations, and I think they've both acted in ways that people can understand and relate to. So even though they're both babyfaces, they've both shown the ability to be complex and not quite so one-dimensional, which is what people sort of demand when they want black and white types of stories.
Yeah, and I think adding complexity to both characters is something, well, adding complexity in general is something WWE usually doesn't do. And then adding it to the main events scene is almost unheard of. When you think about complex feuds in wrestling, normally they are the second feud from the top. It's something in that, upper mid-card slot that gets really complex and emotional and psychological. It's not the very top program, simply because the very top program is usually kind of boring. And AJ Styles versus Roman Reigns, up to this point, has not been boring. I would say in any week that it's been done, especially with Gallows and Anderson being around and keeping it interesting, this is a wonderful use of both guys, and it's a great feud to highlight what is a very different feeling Raw. We talk about, you know, the new era being a branding thing and WWE working really hard to brand it, but Jake, I'm watching Hulu Raw this morning as we record on Tuesday morning, and I think people will hear this on Wednesday, but I'm watching this Hulu episode of Raw, and I'm seeing a ton of guys who weren't on the show a year ago, weren't on the show 2 years ago, or even guys that I see, most are in different roles than they were a few years back. I'm seeing guys who I watched in NXT, who have done a lot, and it's not just guys, it's also women. Jake, what do you think of the debut of Dana Brooke?
You know, I was kind of excited to see it. When Emma made her way back to Raw, it did feel like something was missing from that act, and I think Dana Brooke sort of played a rather large role in her resurgence. You know, the evil Emma character obviously can stand on its own in its own right, but I think there was something to that friendship and how they went about, you know, abusing the baby faces down in NXT that made them sort of click together. And I like Dana. I think she's made a lot of progress. You know, she's not where I would consider her needed to be to compete on her own at the main event level, but certainly is a part of a group with Emma. I think she does add something to that, and I think people are going to see, you know, from a personality perspective, that those two click really well.
Yeah, I think they have a chemistry together. They have a fun act, and I've been saying I want to see them tell more than one story with the women. I want to see WWE really get into having 2, 3, 4 stories going in that women's division, because they have a lot of talent there. Jason and I, you know, we're pouring over the WWE roster in .NET Weekly right now, and the amount of women on the roster, it's like 16, 17 women on the main roster. That's enough that, you know, it's not as big as the amount of men, but that's enough to have 2 or 3 feuds happening at once. It's enough to have a team of bad guys, women, whatever you want to, whatever pronoun you feel like using there, a team of heels and a team of baby faces. There are a lot of things that they can do with this, and
it's enough Dana Brooke adds to it. Division if they wanted to.
It really is enough to have a tag division. I kind of think, and maybe you call up a couple more of the NXT women. I know that leaves that division a little barren, but a tag division would be really fun to see. And it would also give another prize there where you don't have to keep making up personal reasons. You don't have to keep, okay, well, this feud is for contendership, this feud's for, you know, the title, and this feud's the personal feud. You don't have to keep doing that. You can let things grow out of that tag division and hopefully not overexpose it.
And singles feuds can emerge out of tag feuds too. I mean, it happens and it works. So I think it's a viable avenue. But I think, you know, the Emma and now Dana feud with Becky Lynch is going to be one to watch, because I think Becky in and of herself, you know, is doing all the right things to get herself over as a babyface. I mean, we've said, you know, for weeks on end now that she's probably the most straight babyface character that they have in the division that's watchable. You know, Natty is a babyface, but god damn if I can't turn her off every time she's on TV.
Oh my god, she was terrible on commentary.
Awful.
She was
just awful.
Like, to me, I know people have said, and a lot of people have argued, Natty's the best in that division. Why isn't Natty the centerpiece? Why isn't she the star? Why isn't... watch her talk on commentary, and then tell me that she needs to be the centerpiece. As kind of down as I am on Charlotte's promos sometime, Natty's are atrocious.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she actually did a decent job with Rick and Charlotte I think it was either last week on SmackDown or maybe the week before. You know, I think she has improved in some cases, and then she goes out and just lays an egg like she did yesterday on Raw, and it's just like, man, it's really hard to get into that character, and I'm not sure, you know, it really is watchable in a lot of ways. Like, I think she's a good fit on Total Divas as like the hen mother, because she's that kind of character, and you need that character on an ensemble television show. But as the focus of a division, I just don't see her being that kind of character. And so I can't imagine them keeping her in this position with Charlotte for very long, other than, you know, giving Charlotte her first signature victory without her dad. At least that's what this appears to be doing.
Yeah, I would say that this one needs to be a good match, because that's what Natty is capable of, and it needs to end quickly. I'm interested. So we kind of see strong heel women appearing right now on the WWE main roster, with Charlotte being a strong heel. I think they're going to build around Dana Brooke and Emma a little bit. I think Becky Lynch is going to do what she did for Charlotte and help get them over. You know, Becky Lynch plays sympathetic really well. We talk about how the WWE women's division started clicking around the Royal Rumble with Becky getting involved. I think she's going to make Dana Brooke now and make her, you know, make her and Emma's act really stand out as important. Who do you see as the up-and-coming baby faces in that division? We have, you know, we have these heels. Of course, Becky counts as one, but we have these heels on the women's side. Who are the baby faces that are there to counter them?
That's a good question. I mean, is Sasha hurt? Do we know why she's not appearing on TV? I haven't really heard much about her as of recently, but I think she could be an interesting character, because she's already been sort of playing babyface to come back in that role.
Yeah, I've heard a couple things. I haven't heard that she is injured, and she's denied reports that she's injured, but at the same time, she's not being used. And some people have hypothesized that they are saving Sasha until they get to SummerSlam, when they want Sasha to win the WWE Women's Championship. But that makes no sense to me, when you could be building up Sasha and build up a big encounter, say a Sasha versus Dana Brooke or a Sasha versus Emma, that ends up with Sasha winning the number one contendership, overcoming a big bad obstacle, and then going on to face Charlotte. You could get the fans on her side that way, and you could start telling that story now. But even that, so there's Sasha, there's Becky, both as baby faces. Natalia's around, and I think Natalia versus Dana Brooke would be fun to see. But who else is there? I kind of just see stronger characters on the heel side, I guess.
I would agree. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of, you know, females in a position to really explode as baby faces. And I guess that's sort of an issue, unless you're going to bring Bayley, you know, in to do that. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, I don't know how quickly they'd want to do that, but none of the other women like just scream baby face to me. I mean, you know, Summer Rae is
Summer Rae's played a heel. Yeah.
Tamina is a heel, you know. Sasha Naomi was a heel. Naomi was a heel. You know, both the Bella twins are out for the foreseeable future. Paige, I guess, is a babyface.
Who even knows?
Who knows?
I mean,
you know, Naomi could become a babyface if they want to position her as such. She was pretty successful at it when she was one of the Funkadactyls, but they really don't have a character that you would just, you know, slot into that role and be a natural babyface leader of a division, unless you want to consider either Becky or Bayley, who seem to be the two obvious candidates.
Yeah, I would say stocking the division up with strong heels is a smart thing to do if you're going to bring Bayley up. But I would also say getting the division right, like having multiple strong characters established in that division before you bring Bayley up, is more important than even having a bunch of heels for her to overcome. Today on ProWrestling.net, members will hear the continued WWE roster evaluation from Jason Powell and Will Pruitt. They can read the latest wrestling news ad-free. Tomorrow, they'll hear Zach Zimmerman's NXT audio review and Will Pruitt's Lucha Underground audio review. Yes, I find it weird that I'm referring to myself in the third person here as well. Want to get in on that .NET membership train? Check out ProWrestling.net, head over to the membership sign-up page, and within minutes, you can be enjoying the benefits of membership. It's just $7.50 per month if you want to try it out, see what happens. Or if you want to lock in that annual option, $5.50 per month is what that rate comes down to. We believe in what we do. We think you'll like it a lot, so check out ProWrestling.net membership. Also, if you're listening to this show on iTunes or other podcast apps, hit us up with a rating. Make like a Ric Flair match. Pretend it's 5 stars. I don't really care. Hit us up with a rating. Tell us what you think. We would love to hear your opinion, and it helps other people get their eyes and ears on this podcast. So thanks so much, and now back to the show. We talk about Raw feeling new. Big Cass comes out. He's in the opening promo segment on Raw. He didn't get to have the match with Chris Jericho, but it looked like the idea was eventually they are going to have that match. Big Cass has performed well with Enzo absent. And do you see this as just, hey, we're going to give him a little bit of spotlight while Enzo's out, and then when Enzo comes back, it's going to be a big thing? Or do you think there's more to this current Big Cass resurgence, or surgence, I guess? No re.
I think Big Cass is going places eventually. Like, he's got all the tools that, you know, traditionally WWE looks for in a guy who could be a main eventer at some point. He's already at the point where he's very confident on the microphone, which is a change for him from where he was not that long ago.
Yeah.
He's, he's actually very good in the ring. I mean, I wouldn't say he's, you know, top notch in terms of who the WWE has on the roster now, but he's getting there. And from a size perspective, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, probably gets Vince McMahon very excited. So I would think that, you know, Big Cass has a big future ahead of him. It's just a matter of him staying healthy and, and consistently improving. And maybe, you know, a year from now, or maybe even not that long, we could see him, you know, sort of breaking away from his tag partner and going on to do bigger and better things.
I think there's something to be said about what letting a guy get some confidence under him can do. Cass always, like, to me, one of the things missing with Cass, and maybe it's because he's next to Enzo, who just exudes confidence, one of the things that always seemed to be missing was just the confidence to do this, the confidence to get it right. And Cass shows up on the main roster, and the crowd goes nuts for him. They go nuts for Enzo. Cass doesn't have to do much, and I'm sure every time he came through the curtain, he was told, that was great. Really good work. That was great. Really good work. And at this point now, aside from the time, of course, Enzo got hurt, where I'm sure he was told, get that out of the way. What's up with Enzo? And he was going, let's go. Let's go. Enzo's hurt. But I'm sure right now he's getting told the same thing. And you can tell he's got a little more swagger to him. He's got a little bit more confidence to him. Cass, I think, is a guy who isn't quite ready to be where he's at. But if he's only there for the short term, that's fantastic. That's exactly what you want as far as a developing star. Get him a little bit of shine. Get him some spotlight. And let him then go back to the tag team. And let him and Enzo be the stars of that division, because it seemed like they were primed to be. I really like this a lot. The flip side of this, we're talking about a lot of new talent on Raw, new era. We haven't even mentioned all of the new guys that are there. The Vaudevillains, who I think are clicking better than I expected them to on the main roster, especially this month. I think that feud with the New Day is going pretty dang well. You look at it, and on the other side of things, the NXT roster seems to be kind of barren. You have on their house shows and on TV, Elias Sampson facing Shinsuke Nakamura. That doesn't seem right to me. You have Samoa Joe as the NXT champion, which is great. And what seems to be happening is NXT, instead of restocking with guys who have been in developmental for a long time, who haven't been on TV, who have been making that Florida circuit of house shows, they seem to be restocking their cupboard of talent with former TNA guys, with longtime stars, guys like your Samoa Joes and your Eric Youngs. Jake, how do you feel about NXT instead of kind of going with that natural progression of, okay, well, this guy was in developmental just like Enzo and Cass, and now he's going to be on TV just like Enzo and Cass? We're kind of going off to the side and going, hey, EY, come on in.
You know, that's an interesting question. I'm all for NXT guys making the move up to the main roster, because I think the main roster was stale and needed an influx of new talent. And I think the utility of, you know, the benefit of having these guys make their way to the main roster has outweighed the impact on NXT. You know, all the TNA guys making their way to NXT, does that, you know, necessarily bother me? No, not really. I mean, I think it is what it is because NXT needs to be a interesting and competitive television show, even though, you know, they're in the process of sort of training up new classes of people to appear on it. You know, I still think it is, you know, it is and it isn't developmental in the sense that, you know, they are there to try to prepare people for the main roster. But at the same time, you know, it's become a money-making business, and I think they need to shore up that lineup with guys who can compete right away. And the guys that have been recently leaving TNA have just sort of fit that profile. And so I'm not sure it's necessarily, oh, man, we couldn't wait for these guys to leave TNA in order to snap them up. It's more of a, we have a need, these guys fit it, and let's make them work.
Yeah, I really wish they... Maybe that we were seeing one or two more of the homegrown talents develop and debut, simply because I think that would be good for everyone. WWE, as much talent as there is out there for them to scoop up and put on TV, homegrown talent is still a really important part of what they do, and they need those guys who came in with no wrestling experience, who have been made in WWE, who have been crafted in that WWE system. They need them to appear and be good. That's going to give confidence to the other guys down in NXT who have been working really, really hard for a long time. On the flip side of that, you see Eric Young come up. I'm guessing Eric Young does not cost, you know, he's not getting paid Shinsuke Nakamura money or anything like that. Eric Young is not a very, you know, he's expensive, more expensive than booking random indie guy number 7. But he's not going to be as expensive as signing some guy full-time to the main roster. You see Eric Young come up and you realize you can use him on a night-to-night basis. Yeah, sure, bring him in. Bolster the roster with that. WWE is in a place where they need... They do need to have good matches on NXT. They do need to have experienced guys along with inexperienced guys there. At the same time, go back and watch NXT TV from 2 years ago, and it was... the development of Sami Zayn you were tracking. It was the development of Enzo and Cass. It was people who weren't ready who were on that TV. And I worry, I guess, about those guys who aren't ready, about the wrestlers who aren't quite there. Where are they going to be if they don't get that time on TV? Where are they going to be if they don't get that experience and that chance to try things out? And that's I guess, where this worries me is there a need for another developmental TV show, something like FCW was, where it's not seen on a wide basis? Because I think internationally televised on the network NXT has become a different thing than NXT was originally meant to be. And it's a good thing for WWE. Like you said, it's a money-making business. But at the same time, it means that they aren't able to develop guys in the same way.
You know, I think a lot of those guys that you're referencing, you know, the ones that aren't quite on television yet and maybe, you know, won't be for a short period of time until they're ready. They're probably working the NXT house shows and, you know, doing the bus tours and going to see those shows and gaining experience that way. I think eventually they will make their way to the television show. I mean, I don't know if WWE can necessarily afford another brand that does limited touring that's not widely available to the public like FCW was.
Yeah.
Maybe they have, you know, the operating budget to do that, but I think that's really where they have a difficult time expanding. You know, they have NXT, it is what it is. Having it make a little bit of money is a big deal. You know, they have big money talent signed there. I mean, there's, you know, the Samoa Joes and the Shinsuke Nakamuras and the Finn Balors of the world aren't free, and they do command something of a salary, Shinsuke especially. But yeah. I think it's more of, you know, we have these gaps because we've had these classes, going, and we have these guys, and then we they're in the oven, and they're baking, and it takes time. You know, I guess it's one of those things where it's like a bad debut is bad forever, and bringing a lot of these guys to TV you know, it could be damaging to them long term if they're really not ready. And I think with the Sami Zayns and the Seth Rollins and the Dean Ambroses of the world that were in FCW a couple of years ago, those guys already had years of experience and were just being honed, you know, in NXT to fit the WWE mold. And I think a lot of these guys that they brought in over the past couple of years into, you know, the WWE Performance Center have been relatively unmolded. I mean, the guys that they have brought in that were on the indies for a long time are probably already on NXT TV. And the ones that were, you know, homegrown are just, you know, they're so raw that it's hard to put them out there and expect them to succeed in a place where they do have so many of these veterans that are running around and doing things that people really enjoy.
Yeah, I guess the fear there is kind of what started to happen with Baron Corbin before he underwent a massive improvement, where Corbin faced a lot of backlash from people who went, "You're not as good as Finn Balor, Neville, and Sami Zayn, so we hate you." And Baron leaned into it, embraced a lot of it, and came out on the other side better for getting it. But you risk, hey, we want to make a new cool babyface out of homegrown guy X, and people rejecting him because he wasn't on the indies. He wasn't the guy we expected. I think it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on in NXT as we see the WWE roster really transforming with a lot of that talent that has bolstered NXT for so long coming up. And I think the expectation of a little bit more of that talent coming up still in the future, I don't think we're done with call-ups for the year or anything like that. It's fun. It's actually a really fun time to be a WWE fan because of that. And with that, we'll wrap it up and talk to you folks tomorrow. Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!